Okay, we are beginning chapter 23 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, called Christmas on the Closed Ward. Was this why Dumbledore would no longer meet Harry's eyes? Did he expect to see Voldemort staring out of them, afraid perhaps that their vivid green might suddenly turn to scarlet, with cat-like slits for pupils? Harry remembered how the snake-like face of Voldemort had once forced itself out of the back of Professor Quillen's head. And he ran his hand over the back of his own, wondering what it would feel like if Voldemort burst out of his skull. He felt dirty and contaminated, as though he were carrying some deadly germ unworthy to sit on the underground train back from the hospital without innocent, clean people whose minds and bodies were free of the taint of Voldemort. He had not merely seen the snake, he'd been the snake. He knew it now. And then a truly terrible thought occurred to him, a memory bobbing to the surface of his mind, one that made his insides writhe and squirm like serpents. What's he after apart from followers? Stuff he can only get by stealth, like a weapon, something he didn't have last time. I'm the weapon, Harry thought. It was as though the poison were pumping through his veins and chilling him, bringing him out in a sweat as he swayed with the train through the dark tunnel. I'm the one Voldemort's trying to use. That's why they've got guards around me everywhere I go. It's not for my protection, it's for other people's. Only it's not working. They can't have someone on me at all times at Hogwarts. I did attack Mr. Weasley last night. It was me. Voldemort made me do it, and he could be inside me, listening to my thoughts right now. "Are you all right, Harry, dear?" whispered Mrs. Weasley, leaning across Ginny to speak to him as the train rattled along through its dark tunnel. "You don't look very well. Are you feeling sick?" They were all watching him. He shook his head violently and stared up at an advertisement for home insurance. "Harry, dear, are you sure you're all right?" said Mrs. Weasley in a worried voice as they walked around the unkempt patch of grass in the middle of Grimmauld Place. "You look ever so pale. Are you sure you slept this morning? You go upstairs to bed right now, and you have a couple hours sleep before dinner, all right?" He nodded. Here was a ready-made excuse not to talk to any of the others, which was precisely what he wanted. So when she opened the front door, he proceeded straight past the troll's leg umbrella stand and up the stairs and hurried to his and Ron's bedroom. Here he began to pace up and down, past the two beds and Phineas Nigel's empty portrait, his brain teeming and seething with questions and ever more dreadful ideas. How would he become a snake? Perhaps he was an animagus? No, he couldn't be. He would know. Perhaps Voldemort was an animagus. Yes, Harry thought, that would fit. He would turn into a snake, of course. And when he's possessing me, then we both transform. It still doesn't explain how I got to London and back in my bed in the space of about 5 minutes, although Voldemort's the most powerful wizard in the world, apart from Dumbledore. It's probably no problem for him at all to transport people like that. And then, with a terrible stab of panic, he thought, but this is insane. If Voldemort's possessing me, I'm giving him a clear view into the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix right now. He'll know who's in the Order and where Sirius is. And I've got loads of stuff I shouldn't... heard loads of stuff I shouldn't have. Everything Sirius told me the first night I was here. There was only one thing for it. He'd have to leave Grimmauld Place straight away. He'd spend Christmas at Hogwarts without the others, which would keep them safe over the holidays, at least. But no, that wouldn't do. There were still plenty of people at Hogwarts to maim and injure. What if it was Seamus, Dean, or Neville next time? He stopped pacing and stood staring at Phineas Nigelus's empty frame. A leaden sensation was settling in the pit of his stomach. He had no alternative. He was going to have to return to Privet Drive, cut himself off entirely from other wizards. Well, if he had to do it, he thought, there was no point hanging around. Trying with all his might not to think of how the Dursleys were going to react when they found him on their doorstep 6 months earlier than they expected, he strode over to his trunk, slammed the lid shut and locked it, and then glanced around automatically for Hedwig, before remembering that she was still at Hogwarts, while her cage would be one less thing to carry. He seized one end of his trunk and had dragged it halfway to the door when the sneaky voice said, "Running away, are we?" He looked around. Phineas Nigelus appeared on the canvas of his portrait and was leaning against the frame, watching Harry with an amused expression on his face. "Not running away, no," said Harry shortly, dragging his trunk a few more feet across the room. "I thought," said Phineas Nigelus, stroking his pointed beard. "That to belong to Gryffindor House, you're supposed to be brave. It looks to me as though you'd be better off in my own house. We Slytherins are brave, yes, but not stupid. For instance, given the choice, we'll always choose to save our own necks." "It's not my own neck I'm saving," said Harry tersely, tugging the trunk over a patch of particularly uneven moth-eaten carpet right in front of the door. "Oh, I see," said Phineas Nigel, still stroking his beard. "This is no cowardly fight. You're being noble." Harry ignored him. His hand was on the doorknob when Phineas Nigel said lazily, "I have a message for you from Albus Dumbledore." Harry spun around. "What is it?" "Stay where you are." "I haven't moved," said Harry, his hand still on the doorknob. "So what's the message?" "I've just given it to you, you dolt," said Phineas Nigel smoothly. "Dumbledore says stay where you are." "Why?" said Harry eagerly, dropping the end of his trunk. "Why does he want me to stay? What else did he say?" "Nothing whatsoever," said Phineas Nigel, raising a thin black eyebrow as though he found Harry impertinent. Harry's temper rose to the surface like a snake rearing its long head. He was exhausted. He was confused beyond measure. He had experienced terror, relief, and then terror again in the last 12 hours, and still Dumbledore didn't want to talk to him? "So that's it, is it?" he said loudly. "Stay there? That's all anyone could tell me after I got attacked by the Dementors, too. Just stay put while the grown-ups sort it out, Harry. I won't bother telling you anything, though, because your tiny little brain might not be able to cope with it." "You know," said Phineas Nigelus, even more loudly than Harry, "this is precisely why I loathed being a teacher. Young people are so infernally convinced that they are absolutely right about everything. Has it not occurred to you, my poor puffed-up popinjay, that there might be an excellent reason why the headmaster of Hogwarts is not confiding every tiny detail of his plans to you? Have you never paused, while feeling hard done by, to note that following Dumbledore's orders has never yet led you into harm? No. No, like all young people, you're quite sure that you alone feel and think, you alone recognize danger, and you alone are the only one clever enough to realize what the Dark Lord may be planning." "He is planning something to do with me then," said Harry swiftly. "Did I say that?" said Phineas Nigelus, idly examining his silk gloves. "Now, if you'll excuse me, I have better things to do than listen to adolescent agonizing. Good day to you." He strolled into his frame and out of sight. "Fine, go then," Harry bellowed at the empty frame, "and tell Dumbledore thanks for nothing." The empty canvas remained silent. Fuming, Harry dragged his trunk back to the foot of his bed and threw himself face down onto the moth-eaten covers, his eyes shut, his body heavy and aching. He felt he had journeyed miles and miles. It seemed impossible that less than 24 hours ago Cho Chang had been approaching him under the mistletoe. He was so tired. He was scared to sleep, yet he didn't know how long he could fight it. Dumbledore told him to stay. That must mean he was allowed to sleep. But he was scared. What if it happened again? He was sinking into shadows. It was as though a film in his head had been waiting to start. He was walking down a deserted corridor through a plain black door, past rough stone walls, torches, and an open doorway onto a flight of stone steps leading downstairs on the left. He reached the black door, but could not open it. He stood gazing at it, desperate for entry. Something he wanted with all his heart lay beyond, a prize beyond his dreams. If only his scar would stop prickling, he'd be able to think more clearly. "Harry," said Ron's voice from far, far away. "Mum says dinner's ready, but she'll save you something if you want to stay in bed." Harry opened his eyes, and Ron had already left the room. "He doesn't want to be with me on his own," Harry thought, not after what he heard Moody say. He supposed none of them would want him there anymore, now that they knew what was inside him. He wouldn't go down to dinner. He would not inflict his company upon them. He turned over onto his other side, and after a while dropped off back to sleep, waking much later in the early hours of the next morning, with his insides aching with hunger, and Ron snoring in the next bed. Squinting around the room, he saw the dark outline of Phineas Nigel standing again in his portrait, and it occurred to him that that Dumbledore had probably set Phineas Nigelus to watch over him in case he attacked somebody else. The feeling of being unclean intensified. He half wished he had not obeyed Dumbledore and stayed. If this was how life was going to be in Grimmauld Place from now on, maybe he'd be better off in Privet Drive after all. And we'll stop there. Don't be like that, my kitten boo.
Nope. I'm not asleep.
What's that?
I'm not asleep.
You're not asleep? Why not?
I'm just a doctor. Read more.
Okay, I'll read more.
Yay.
You're a sweet kitten.
I love you.
I love you too, kitty. You're so adorable. Everybody else spent the following morning putting up Christmas decorations. Harry could not remember Sirius ever being in such a good mood. He was actually singing carols, apparently delighted that he was to have company over Christmas. Harry could hear his voice echoing up through the floor in the cold and empty drawing room where he was sitting alone, watching the sky outside the windows growing whiter, threatening snow, and all the time feeling a savage pleasure that he was giving the others the opportunity to keep talking about him, as they were bound to be doing. When he heard Mrs. Weasley calling his name softly up the stairs around lunchtime, he retreated further upstairs and ignored her. It was around 6 o'clock in the evening that the doorbell rang, and Mrs. Black started screaming again. Assuming that Mundungus or some other order had come to call, Harry merely settled himself more comfortably against the wall of Buckbeak the Hippogriff's room, where he was hiding, trying to ignore how hungry he felt as he fed Buckbeak dead rats. It came as a slight shock when somebody hammered hard on the door a few minutes later. "I know you're in there," said Hermione's voice. "Will you please come out? I want to talk to you." "What are you doing here?" Harry asked her, pulling open the door as Buckbeak resumed his scratching at the straw-strewn floor for any fragments of rat he might have dropped. "I thought you were skiing with your mom and dad." "Well, to tell the truth, skiing's not really my thing," said Hermione, "so I've come for Christmas." There was snow in her hair, and her face was pink with cold. "But don't tell Ron that. I told him it's really good because he kept laughing so much. Anyway, Mom and Dad are a bit disappointed, but I told them that everyone who's serious about the exams is staying at Hogwarts to study. They want me to do well. They'll understand. Anyway," she said briskly, "let's go to your room. Ron's mom's lit a fire in there, and she sent up sandwiches." Ron's mom is pretty awesome as a mother.
"Yeah, she is."
"I came on the night bus," said Hermione airily, pulling off her jacket before Harry had time to speak. "Dumbledore told me what had happened the first thing yesterday morning, but I had to wait for term to end officially before setting off. Umbridge is already livid that you lot disappeared right under her nose, even though Dumbledore Mr. Weasley was in St. Mungo's, and he'd given you permission to visit. So," he sat next to Ginny, and the two girls and Ron looked up at Harry. "How are you feeling?" asked Hermione. "Fine," said Harry stiffly. "Oh, don't lie, Harry," she said impatiently. "Ron and Ginny say you've been hiding from everyone since you got back from St. Mungo's." "They do they?" said Harry, glaring at Ron and Ginny. Ron looked down at his feet, but Ginny seemed to be quite unabashed. "Well, you have," she said, "and you won't look at any of us." "It's you lot who won't look at me," said Harry angrily. "Maybe you're taking it in turns to look and keep missing each other," suggested Hermione, the corners of her mouth twitching. "Very funny," snapped Harry, turning away. "Oh, stop feeling all misunderstood," said Hermione sharply. "Look, the others told me what you overheard last night in the extendable years." "Yeah," growled Harry, his hands deep in his pockets as he watched the snow falling thickly outside. "All been talking about me, have you? Well, I'm getting used to it." "We wanted to talk to you, Harry," said Ginny, "but as you've been hiding ever since we got back." "I don't want anyone to talk to me, said Harry, who was feeling more and more nettled. "Well, that was a bit stupid of you," said Ginny angrily, "seeing as you don't know anyone but me who's been possessed by you-know-who, and I can tell you how it feels." Harry remained quite still at the impact of those words. Then he turned on the spot to face her. "I forgot," he said. "Lucky you," said Ginny coolly. "I'm sorry," Harry said, and he meant it. So do you think I'm being possessed then?" "Well, can you remember everything you've been doing?" said Ginny. "Are there big blank periods where you don't know what you've been up to?" Harry racked his brains. "No," he said. "Then you know who hasn't possessed you," said Ginny simply. "When he did it to me, I couldn't remember what I'd been doing for hours at a time. I'd find myself somewhere and not know how I got there." Harry hardly dared believe her, yet his heart was lightening almost in spite of himself. That dream I had about your dad and the snake, though. Harry, you've had those dreams before, said Hermione. You had flashes of what Voldemort was up to last year. This was different, said Harry, shaking his head. I was inside that snake. It felt like I was the snake. What if Voldemort somehow transported me to London? One day, said Hermione, sounding thoroughly exasperated, you'll read Hogwarts a History, and perhaps that will remind you that you can't apparate or disapparate inside Hogwarts. Even Voldemort can't just make you fly out of your dormitory, Harry. You didn't leave your bed, mate, said Ron. I saw you thrashing around in your sleep about a minute before we could wake you up. Harry started pacing up and down, thinking. What they were all saying was not only comforting, it made sense. Without really thinking of it, he took a sandwich from the plate on the bed and crammed it hungrily into his mouth. I'm not the weapon after all, thought Harry. His heart swelled with happiness and relief, and he felt like joining in as they heard Sirius tramping past their door toward Buckbeak's room, singing God Rest Ye Merry Hippogriffs at the top of his voice. And I think we'll stop there. What do you think, kitten?
It sounds good.
I love you so much, kitty boo. You're the sweetest girl. Sleep well, kitty boo. I love you. Good night.